You're listening to PodcastJuice.net.
Podcast Juice is working it like a job and we need your help. Check out our crowdsourcing campaign over on Indiegogo. Details are on PodcastJuice.net. Remember, work it like a job and let's take this thing to the next level. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Geeked Out on PodcastJuice.net. My name is Michael Dean and thank you for listening. Let me introduce the round table today. Actually, joining us damn near for the first time on Geeked Out, from what I can remember, Mr. Day Droppin. How are you, sir?
How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, man. Thanks for being here.
I think I was here one other time, but
about years ago, right?
Yeah.
Right on, man. And actually, we're approaching the official number 100 of the show coming up pretty soon. We've probably done well over 100, but wasn't counting them before. All right. Next up, Mr. Sean Hill. How are you?
I'm doing well. Another beautiful day in San Diego, California. Ready to get on some interesting discussions here.
All right. Next up is Mr. Q Storm. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. Ready to get into some Star Wars.
All right. Next up is Aunt Pooh. How you doing, sir?
These aren't the slaves you're looking for.
Ooh, I like that. And last but not least, Mr. Big Sexy. How are you, sir?
I am well, and it is not beautiful here. It's overcast and icky.
Oh, all right. Sound like some Seattle weather. All right. So today we're going to get into a number of things. First thing on the bat is Star Wars Issue 1. This is Marvel Comics. They have reclaimed the rights to the comics of Star Wars, and they've launched their new series called Star Wars, written by one of my favorite writers from Scout, Jason Aaron. And also the artist is John Cassidy, is his name. So this is the new Star Wars in terms of this takes place right after A New Hope. This is a part of the continuity. So this is not the Legends branded Star Wars stuff that you see out there. This is actually part of the new continuity now. So this is a new story. We're going to go around the room and give our thoughts. First, I'm going to go to Big Sexy. What'd you think about this?
You know, the other day when this came out, I was going to read it because I do love Jason Aaron's stuff. And let me go ahead and take my beating now. Mm-mm. I've said this before and I'll say it again. A lot of what I don't like about Star Wars is the lexicon of language that is used. When I see the word Tatooine or whatever the hell it's pronounced, I'm like, really? One of my five? Oh, and a lot of things like that, and words like Wookiee. I'm like, really? Or who are you? Don't pander me. But then, as I read through the book, you know, you see Solo doing his, you know, swashbuckling deal. It was a little bit overwritten until my guy comes on the scene, the pimp cloak and all, Vader. He makes it all relevant because he's the baddest man on the block, period. And I also saw at the end of this book, they're giving Vader his own little spinoff book. And I like Vader because he doesn't raise his voice. You know, Chewie's at one point trying to play the sniper role. And Vader's like, it was the Wookiee after him. And then he takes a couple of his boys and uses them as shields. That's just cold-blooded. Vader's the man. I love Vader. I'm a Vader fan.
All right. What did you think of the artwork here?
You know, John Cassidy, to me, he's not, you know, a superstar artist. A lot of people like his stuff. I didn't like his stuff back on the X-Men run that he did several years ago. And the rumor is, or the concern is, that he takes so long to get his stuff out that it's hard to get him on a monthly book. So we will be keeping an eye on that. I mean, it looked good. I mean, it looked dramatic and not overly stylized like a lot of Image things do nowadays. But it looked pretty good. I mean, it was very, I don't want to say serviceable, but it was very unintrusive. Yeah, I liked it.
All right. Q-Storm, what do you think of this?
Well, I'm probably going to take a beating, but not for the same reasons as Big Sexy. I'm just a little torn. I'm not going to say the story was bad, but let me tell you the problems I had with it. And maybe you can help me out with one of them. This is a little nitpick, but it just struck me as I felt like I was reading a Marvel comic book. What I mean by that is the way all of the characters were introduced, it just struck me as that it was like they were being presented to me as a superhero team. that's how I felt when I was reading the book. It's like, okay, it felt like because we have Han and Chewie together, we have to have the whole crew together. We have to have Princess Leia. We have to have Luke together. When I just, it's not like they need to be one unit at all times. Like, I just don't buy the Princess Leia. I know she did in the films, but I think there were extenuating circumstances. I just don't buy that Princess Leia would be going on a away mission. She would be back at the, you know, royal control room or whatever.
Delegating
authority. And we would still see, we would see like a subplot or the B story with her involved, and maybe 3PO would be with her. But R2, I could see R2 going on the mission because he has a lot of logistical value. But it just struck me as like I was watching the X-Men, the way they were taking on this whole munitions supply station. Now, here's the big problem I had with this. If this comic is supposed to fall between episode 4 and episode 5, for me, that last panel, unless they're going to throw something out at me, it completely fucks up the continuity. Because as far as I'm concerned, Darth Vader and Luke are supposed to meet for the first time in episode 5 and have that battle where he reveals that he's Luke's father. I think they're already, just like the, I think they're already fudging the timeline, trying to come up with stories, and they're going to ruin the continuity that's been established with the original, well, with the original films. So that was a huge problem for me. I'm like, you're diminishing the impact of Vader and Luke meeting for the first time on Bespin and having that first lightsaber duel. So I got a big problem with that. I don't want to see any more of that in the series. As far as the artwork goes, I mean, they did a masterful, whoever it was, he did a masterful job of rendering the actual actors, but I think he shouldn't limit himself to that. They don't have to look exactly like the actors that played those parts, so it got a little bit, kind of got in the way for me, but, you know, it was, like Big Sexy said, it was serviceable.
All right. Aunt Pooh, did you read this?
Yes, indeed I did, and I have to totally agree with, reluctantly, with Q-Stone regarding, and this is not a sexist rant, but why the hell did they have to make Leia this badass fisticuffs, hand-to-hand combat soldier? That's not what she was about. I mean, yes, we saw her in Return of the Jedi, her wielding a gun and shooting it. And I guess she does become a Jedi. But that's, what, 5-10 years from this point? Seeing her in this on this role when we didn't see her in Empire Strikes Back nor Return of the Jedi taking this active infiltration mission type role just was a little off-putting to me. The other thing was Luke busting out that lightsaber and being able to just whip it, being able to maneuver it. I won't say whip it around because I don't need to pause. I think at this point in time, if this took place right after A New Hope, that kind of does tinker with the timeline just a tad bit.
All right, what do you think about the artwork?
Artwork looks good, but that's John Cassidy. I mean, the dude. Yeah. I've been a fan of his since Astonishing X-Men, so I have no complaints with how he's drawn any of the characters whatsoever, and I like the artwork. Now, I think Vader looks a little smallish, but other than that, I like it.
Still the baddest man in the room.
All right. Well, I thought I liked the artwork. I thought that he was able to capture Harrison Ford's facial expressions really good. I don't think he captured Hamill or Carrie Fisher's as much as he did Harrison Ford's, but I did like the artwork. I am somewhat of a fan of John Cassidy's, but I thought he did good. I was like, it's not overly stylized, which I think is good, and it does look like the characters. I found myself when I was reading this, when I was reading Han Solo's part, in my mind I'm reading it as if Harrison Ford was saying it, which I thought was kind of funny to me. I enjoyed this. I didn't know where they were going to go with this story. And, you know, they throw, to me, this whole story is, you know, somebody uses the word pandering a lot. And this is a callback just to like, hey, here's this character. And, You know, this is written for those who obviously you got to know something about this, because the way they're all presented, even some of the poses harken back to different shots from other movies and different things. So for me, I take this as fun. I would agree that this being part of the continuity can be troubling. Like it sort of like takes away some of the things from the movies. But I think that has already been done with the release of the prequels, has already destroyed the continuity, in my opinion. But this, so being based off of it, we live in a world where the prequels exist and there is no surprise who Darth Vader is at this point. If you watched any of those movies, this doesn't do anything to more damaging than that could possibly have done. The thing with Luke standing there about to fight Vader, that is very curious. And I'm wondering what's about to happen. Is he just going to run, as it says, or are they going to sit there and try and duel? That would be very interesting. And I, you know, for Marvel's point, they do have me to go want to read the second one because I want to see what the hell that's all about. Comics like this, and the last thing I'll say, are interesting to me because I'm wondering, is this just a finite story they're going to tell with this? Because it doesn't say this is a limited book or anything, because they can't go too far with this. Like, you're going to get in the way of, you're going to run up against Empire Strikes Back. So how much can they really possibly be doing here with the story? But that is to say, we will see. I will say that I think that this is a good start. You know, I thought the quality was well done. The other part, last thing I'll say, I was amazed at the length of the story. I'm reading this, waiting for this, like, okay, they're about to end it here. They're about to end it here. I'm like, damn, this book is kind of thick. You know, I was like, okay, I give them credit, in my opinion, for it. I just thought it was going to end a lot earlier. So when they kept going, I was like, okay. Yeah, they put something into this. So that's all right. So I will read the second one. Will anybody else pick up the second one?
Oh, yeah, I'll pick it up.
I'll pick it up, but I want – now, Big Sexy, you're more of a trekker, right?
Yes.
See, I kind of I walk within both universes. I'm not going to say one's better than the other, but I know you're the Trek fan, so you'll appreciate this. You remember the TV show, the Trek show Enterprise? It was the prequel?
Yeah.
See – I'm a purist, and the reason I couldn't watch that show is because they established all of this universe that you never hear about in any of the subsequent shows, which I know it's impossible, but that's why I felt like that show was doomed to start, at least for me, because you can't have all of these earth-shaking battles, and you never hear Kirk talk about, you know, oh, remember when they fought the Suliban or whatever, you know. So for me, it's just, I don't know if that made any sense, but
no, it makes perfect sense. I agree completely.
Right. So it's leading into this. If we see Luke and Vader square off in this book, it ruins two things for me. One, it ruins the impact of me sitting in that theater as a kid and saying, oh, shit, Luke is going to finally meet up with Vader and get revenge for him killing Obi-Wan in the first Star Wars. It ruins that. It ruins building that moment up. And two, it ruins the dialogue for me, because you should have had dialogue in the movie saying, oh, you're back for more, boy, or something like that. Or you ran the first time, assuming he's going to run. You ran the first time. Are you back for more? Or Luke, and Luke says, no, I'm here to stand my ground, or whatever. It ruins, it ruins the
Who's
whole.
Who's to say they don't add that?
Stand my ground.
Yeah. Oh wow. That's not funny.
if Lucas does that, he's a dead. Well, I guess Lucas can't do it no more, can he?
It'd be Disney. Well, you're just saying. But you're right. But Star Wars threw that out of the window, obviously years ago when they put those three prequels out. Right. None of
but
this.
No,
shit.
I don't think I disagree with that.
Really?
I think I agree that like the one that comes to mind is the C-3PO thing, because if he was made by Anakin and he's from Tatooine, how does he not remember Tatooine when he jettisons over it?
Yeah. And what about Darth Vader, the character? They totally have ruined Empire Strikes Back because you know he's his father. You didn't know that going in.
But I didn't know it then, so it didn't matter.
Oh, I know, but you know it now. And as you said, it ruins your childhood. I don't know how something could ruin your childhood that's already happened, but you said it would ruin your childhood experiences.
No,
I'm saying, wouldn't this also, it takes away the surprise element of that revelation in the movie? Because, you know, as the viewer, we were shocked to see it. Not alone was Luke, but just as Luke was. But now you can't be shocked to know that Vader is the father, because they've ruined that with the prequels.
How did they? No, how did they? I don't follow you.
Okay. Well,
it was a shock in Empire Strikes Back that we find out that Vader is Luke's father. So then when they go to the prequels, I already know it. So, but there's nothing to be shocked about.
Right. What I'm saying. So it takes away that whole element away that one of the things that made that movie surprising and shocking was that. But that's gone now, right?
You're talking in terms of a new viewer.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not talking about a new viewer. I'm talking about me being an older viewer who remembers when I first saw the movie in the theater.
Well, that's what I said. I don't know how something could take away something you've already experienced. But I hear what you're saying. But they can't never take what you've already done. It's just different viewpoints, Q. I hear you.
Okay.
Any last words in the comic? All right, we'll continue on. So definitely go check out Star Wars issue 1. Actually, the second issue, I believe, comes out in a few weeks, which I find very good. So you don't have to take a long wait.
So, Michael, what's the name of it again? Because I haven't read it. But
it's called Star Wars.
You guys got me. Okay, just straight Star Wars by Marvel Comics.
Oh, you know, and just so you guys know, maybe you already know, I went to my comic book shop last night. Apparently, there are 20 different variant covers.
Yes. Yep.
Yes.
There are.
Yes.
Some of them are very good.
The one that I really want, which I guess has been snapped up, is the one with Alex Ross. He recreates the graphic novel from the 70s, the cover of the 70s graphic novel.
That's my computer wallpaper, actually.
Yeah, nice.
It's some good stuff in there. Yeah, it's interesting. I think this is also one of the bigger selling comics in a long time as well, if I'm not mistaken. Like over a million comics sold, which is interesting. And yes, they do have... They not only preview the Vader book in there, which to me is it's whatever. I'm so used to expanded universe, but it seems as if Vader goes to talk to Jabba at the palace.
See,
I didn't buy that either.
I was like, okay.
here's the thing: that book, the Star Wars book, was $4.99.
Yeah. It's expensive.
I mean, see, to me, it's just this is why I stopped reading comics because, one, again, they're going to fuck up the continuity of my cherished original three movies. And two, they're looking to make a buck. You got a comic book about Vader and one about Leia?
Yeah, that's what I said. You got a Leia one coming out.
No, I know. I know.
The artwork for Leia looks terrible.
You know what? I agree, but I do like that artist. I think he does.
So do I. Like Dodson too, but this one, ugh.
Yeah. So, but Marvel has it back, and they're going to – they didn't get it back to be holding on to the story. They got it to get that money, and I see that they're going hard for it.
Got to get paid.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, gentlemen, I have to do the same. I will see you all next week.
All right, man. Thank you for coming through, sir.
Flossing.
All right. So now we're going to jump over to some movie stuff. The new movie that just came out, well, in wide release, American Sniper. Which I believe is directed by Clint Eastwood.
All right, I'm going to step out too, fellas, because I have not seen the film.
All right, well, thank you for coming through, sir.
All right.
So, American Sniper, Clint Eastwood, also starring, is it Bradley Cooper? Is that his name?
Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Cooper, who's been in a lot of big projects, movie projects, last few years. This is a true story movie, right? There's a guy, this is about a real person. I just saw before we started the show that this movie has broken the January box office record, I think, for a single day. They're saying that it did like $30 million on Friday, yesterday alone, which is very interesting. As I wouldn't have assumed a movie like this would, you know, I think it's an R-rated movie, right? Busting it down. So it's a very popular movie. Definitely. So I'm going to go around the room. Day dropping, you're not here normally, so I'm going to start with you. What did you think about American Sniper?
Well, for me, it was interesting for me to watch because the reality is that if I look on a clear day outside my window here, I can see where they filmed the last part of the film there because I actually filmed it about a mile away from here. So, you know, I'm driving when I'm looking at the women like, oh, that's that spot down there in downtown. Yeah. You know, cause it was pretty neat how the way they turned that into, well, I don't know where it was. He was at Afghanistan. I don't remember, but how they turned it into that. But, you know, aside from that, that was my reasoning for wanting to see the movie, because I wanted to see this, our city portrayed there. Mm-hmm. And but that was a lure for me. However, in watching the whole thing, I was pleasantly surprised. This was one of those movies where the previews and everything – they bring you in, and it's very exciting on that point. However, it's more than what you see. There's a lot more going on in this movie, and I like that. And I should have expected that, being a Clint Eastwood film. The guy is all about human characteristics and dealing with humans in general, and how they are, and their issues, and their high points and low points. That's how his movies are. And I should have expected that, and I was not disappointed. It's a very well done movie, in my opinion. It's very sad, and I've mentioned to people at work, hey, you know what? Two people in general. One of them, he's still active military, and he's actually is a sniper. And I told him, hey, you got to check it out. It's pretty good. You might dig it, you know. You know, we never talked too deep about his what he does and all, because that would probably be rude, but. I'm interested to hear what he has to say about the things that he sees in the movie, because he's all about authenticity. Hmm. Spoke with the other people, telling them, you know what, you got to check out this movie. It's pretty good, American Sniper. And some of the immediate reactions are, I just can't see Bradley Cooper in that role. Like, I'm so used to seeing him in the other movies where he plays a goofball and this and that. And I tell him, well, he's going to surprise you. He goes, surprise you the way Jake Gyllenhaal surprised you, is going to surprise you in Nightcrawler. And, it was interesting to see how he is very different in this movie, because he could have been silly, but he didn't do it. The parts that could be considered funny or silly, they were in character and they were very well done. Suspense is good in this movie. I did not really try to read too much into the character, the real person, to see what happened and this and that, to correlate with the movie. So I was pleasantly intrigued by the movie as I was watching it. And I did enjoy it. One of the better movies that I've seen in a while.
All right. Sean Hill, what'd you think?
It was very good. I agree with a lot of points that Ernie made. Maybe I should have had him guest review it for the blog, since I didn't get a chance to write one. Bradley Cooper loses himself in this role. There were many, many times where I'm forgetting them watching Bradley Cooper, and that is an asset as any actor can have. He put on the weight, which I think I already put on 40-45 pounds. You know, he's got the beard, and you know, he's got the accent. The film starts out a little bit clunky. I really don't like when they do this back and forth. You know, we'll see him as an adult. Let's go back to a pivotal moment of his childhood, and let's go back to an adult and let's show him as a teenager. Da, da, da. I'm more of a, let's just tell the story straight through. But once he gets going, and once he gets in the military, and those training scenes are riveting. I've never served in the military. I do have a family member that served in the military, and I mean, if that's realistic, which I'm sure it is, my hat's off to him. Anybody that's listening that served military, my hat's off to you. I really like Clint Eastwood's direction. He towards the middle of the film, a lot of the sniper scenes are well shot and riveting. I will say the only thing I didn't like, and minor spoiler here, the ending. And now when I say the ending, I don't mean the actual ending where the credits are rolling. I'm meaning that scene that leads up to the ending. And I'm not going to spoil what happens. But as a director, he televises what's going to happen. I didn't know the story. I knew it was based on a true story, but I didn't know what is the outcome of the story. And as soon as that scene started, I knew what was going to happen. Did either one of y'all have that same reaction to that part?
I had an inkling. My wife did when we were watching it. She was telling me ahead of time what was going to be going on. She called it.
Yeah, I knew what was going to happen before, but I wasn't sure how they were going to play it in the movie.
Right.
I just want to add real quick, I agree with you, because when the wife looks, and I'm like, why is she doing that? Why are they yeah. zooming in on that. But yeah,
that's yeah. See, that's a movie moment. That's not two characters interacting. That's not a character doing something. That's a movie moment. And a director as accomplished as Eastwood, you would think that he would have been able to better handle that scene. But I would definitely, like I said, I didn't do a written review of it, but if I were, it would have definitely been 4 stars. Now, having said that, I don't think it's the better of the recent military films that have been out. Lone Survivor, Zero Dark Thirty, The Hurt Locker. I think The Hurt Locker is probably the better of all of them, followed by Lone Survivor, Zero Dark Thirty, and then this one. Not taking it into account, I just, some of the stuff we've seen before, you know what I mean? So it wasn't original and fresh, but Cooper definitely gives an outstanding performance. I'm not going to weigh in yet on who I think is going to win or should win Academy Awards, but his nomination was definitely warranted, and he's got a good shot at winning.
All right. I actually just ended up finished watching this last night, and I agree with you guys. I enjoyed the movie. I thought the acting was great. Bradley Cooper, he did his thing. I don't know if this is on the level of like Born on the 4th of July acting. Like,
no,
I think
no,
Tom Cruise, no. You know, just shutting it down. But I do think he was beyond. Like, I just have an expectation when I think of Bradley Cooper. And for some reason, it sort of always goes back when I first saw him. And what was those movies? Those comedy movies?
Hangover. I couldn't remember.
So I always kind of remember him as being like this comedy type of dude. But in the last few years, obviously, he's shown that he's way more than that. And this was, he did excellent in this. The only thing I would say about this movie, and I agree with Sean, I've seen a lot of this type of stuff in movies before. So it wasn't necessarily anything new. Like, you know, you got the training montage, and then you got him going overseas. You know, I've seen all that. You know, for me, Platoon was like the first movie that blew my head open to this kind of stuff. But I think the story is a good story. Mm-hmm. I think it's a sad story. You know, I felt for the guy, you know, like, man, you know, this is unfortunate. You know, I'm not going to get into the politics of this and why they're fighting the war, but I just thought it was very sad. You know, they capture the battle moments very well. I thought the parts where they're overseas or, you know, fighting and stuff and in the streets, I was like, man, this is crazy. I can only imagine what's going through their heads dealing with this. And I walked away from this movie saying, man, this guy, you know, they said he had, 250 kills or something. That's got a weigh on a person, right? I mean, like, you can't be shooting kids and different things and it not hit you. And he was a father himself. So I really felt sad for him. I felt sad for his family and the kids. It's like, damn, this is some depressing stuff. But it's real. You know,
go ahead. The studio made a big, big mistake, too, I think. The best scene in the movie is in the trailer or in the commercials that I've seen, where he's at the bar, you know, and I don't know if she calls him or he calls her, and she's like, he's like, I'm stateside. I've been here, you know, and she's like, you know, we'll come home, but he can't because, like you said, all that stuff is just weighing on him,
right.
You know, And I mean, it's such a powerful scene. And I was like, why are they putting this in the, I mean, I guess to sell the movie, but it's such a good scene.
Interesting.
That it kind of, you know, encapsulates the whole movie. Another thing I thought was interesting too, were the scenes where he's having, not necessarily flashbacks, but I think it was a blender, right? That like, you know, he kind of startles him and, you know, and then there was
his PTSD moments, basically.
Yeah.
That. Sorry, I knew it was a term. I just couldn't think of it. Yeah, I like those little. I like those little touches. Now there were a couple of parts where I'm going, really? When he's on the phone with his wife, you know, when he's like, basically, you know, on a stakeout. I'm like, would he really be able to be? Should he be on the phone while he's doing this?
I think some of them get down like that. I mean, that's. Technology is so it's not that much to have a cell phone.
Well, it's not the technology. It's, you know, you're trying to protect you and your people. You're on the phone. You're talking, obviously. So if someone, you're giving away your position. That's my kind of thing. But again, Clint Eastwood is such a perfectionist. I'm sure that did really happen. But even if it really happened, is that really something that you should be doing as a soldier? I don't know. I just kind of question that.
Right. That's what I said. You can go through a lot of what they're doing and question me, like, why is this happening like that? And I think that's part of the movie is that it is so absurd. Some of the things that happen, you wouldn't imagine that that is what's going on. Like, you know what I mean? Like, to me, the biggest takeaways was like, I can't imagine what if I lived out there? I don't know how I would be able to survive. I wouldn't be able to survive if I was living in a war zone. Like, that shit is crazy. And then, like, the fact that that guy is in that and then he comes back stateside. And like, I was like, how can you function? Like, I don't understand.
Right. Yeah, that's the main story behind it. And that's what really drives it more.
And like, when he went to he was at the hospital with his wife, then the ultrasound, and the doctor's like looking at him and she said, let me take your blood pressure. And I looked at him like, what's the problem? But then when she took it, this dude, he's still at war. Like, he's ready. And I'm like,
that's the thing.
That's sad, man. I was like, God, that's unfortunate. And the other part is I've actually met a couple of dudes at a previous job, very young guys. And they had that aggression, like, and they just couldn't shake it off yet. And that's why so it kind of hit home to me. I was like, damn, man, this is, I don't know what the answer is, but yeah, this is a very real thing. You know.
Right. Yeah, and I recall turning to my wife during that scene when his blood pressure amount came out, and I turned to my wife and I told her, "Man, he's still there."
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what we remember. But I think that's what you're supposed to think. You're supposed to go that way, and that's why I really like the movie, because it really forces you to have to think about those type of things.
Yeah.
The action parts are well done, but it's more than that, and that's why I said I was pleasantly surprised. Pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. Now, I know we're going to get into snubs and all that in a little bit here, but I'm not surprised that Clint didn't get a nomination for directing. I don't know the reason why, of course. I mean, no one really knows the reason, but it doesn't surprise me. I wouldn't put him on he was snubbed list. I think he's done better as a director.
All right. I can see that. So, yeah, I definitely recommend you go out and see this movie. It's very interesting, thought-provoking, and it definitely will. I think it's one of those type of movies that will make you feel something. You know, it will
some
make
type
you,
of way.
Yeah, it make you feel some type of way. So definitely check out American Sniper. And it's a true story, so it's always interesting. All right, we're going to shift gears, but I believe Mr. Day Dropping will be dropping out here at this point. You're certainly welcome to stay. If you like, sir.
Hello.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if you're going to be dropping out now or did you want to stay around? Or?
Oh, no, I got to head on out, Mike.
All right, man. Well, thank you for sitting in with us on this. I really appreciate it.
Well, dude, and thank you guys for talking about that comic. I'm definitely going to check that out.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. All right, man. We'll see you later.
All right. Bye.
Okay. Now, we're going to get into, we want to talk about the Oscars. Oh, before we get into that, real quick. Another one of these movies that's up for some awards, Boyhood. Finally watched that last week, and man, what an emotional movie that was for me. First of all, I will say I thought the movie was excellent. I didn't know what it was going to be about, didn't know what to expect. It essentially tells the story of a young boy, his parents are divorced, and you just follow him through life as he continues on, you know, growing into a young man. And the very interesting thing about this is the actual character that plays the boy, and like everybody else in the movie, you see them grow. Like, he is, I don't remember how old he is. Maybe Sean knows the age that they start out with, but
I want to say he was like 8 or 9 when they started.
Yeah, he's a very young kid. And you see him progressively change. And, you know, this movie has been shot over 12 years. So you definitely see this guy changing. And his sister as well changes. And the only person that doesn't change in this one I thought was very funny was Ethan Hawke. Like, he looks exactly exactly the same he did 12 years ago to today. They give him a mustache. But if they were to take that mustache, he didn't age at all. I was like, God, this guy, he like a brother. But let me say this. In the first 10 minutes of that movie, I was in tears. Like, there's something about that little boy. I saw my son in that. I was seeing my life in this, and I was just, it was hard for me to watch this movie. And it was, I have to give props to whoever wrote this thing. The dialogue and the situations that go on with these families, it was so real to me. I was like, damn, that shit, that's how it be going down. What happens when the new guy comes to a relationship or a new chick comes in? You know, how did the kids see it? You know, it's just, it was one of the most emotional movies I've ever seen in my life. Like, it was hard. I had to stop watching. I was like, you know what? I can't do this, man. It's making me confront a lot of shit. And it was heavy stuff. So that was a very heavy, heavy movie to me. But I did, I went back and watched the rest of it. And I really liked it. That young kid, he's a boy, you know, young man now. He did his thing when he was a kid, man. Like, the way he was looking, the looks and stuff that he would give. And his, I mean, it was just so real to me. I was something like, this seemed like it's like a documentary or something, but it's not. I was blown away by that movie. So Boyhood, definitely go watch that. That's a great freaking movie. I can understand if it gets a lot of accolades because I think it deserves it. One, from a production standpoint, and two, the story and the acting was really good to me.
I was going to say, it's funny that I haven't watched it yet. I'm going to try to watch it today, actually. But it's funny that you had the emotional connection to it. You remember we were talking about, I guess it had to be last year. I think we each really, really liked Fruitvale Station. Mm-hmm. You know, while we agreed it, you know, it's definitely not the best. I picked it as the best film of that year. But with the acknowledgement that I clearly liked American Hustle better. I mean, that to me, that's more of a fun watch. But because of that emotional connection that I had to Fruitvale Station, I'm like, well, this movie can bring that kind of – I haven't cried in a movie since Do the Right Thing. So that'll tell you something. It's got to be at the top, right? I mean, it's just got to be the best movie if it can make me cry. So and I know you had said – and I won't punch a ticket for it, but you said that you liked Boyhood better than Selma.
I do.
little joke there. I know, I'm just teasing. I'm not going to punch a ticket.
I will say this. I think that it is a better made movie. And I think, and again, for me personally, now this is not for everybody, for me personally, the story hits home way, it's told way better than Selma. And I love Selma. That hits me emotionally too, but
yeah, but you know what I mean.
No, I hear what you're saying.
I'm giving you a hard time. So I'm now curious, and I know it's like, isn't it 3 hours? It's pretty long, right? Remember the time? Yeah,
it is long, and I don't know if it was three, but it is long. It's a long movie.
Okay, yeah, I for me, it's always just finding the time, you know, that I can watch it uninterrupted. But I definitely really want to get into this whole Oscar whitewash
thing. Yeah, let's get into it. Let's get into it.
I took my blood pressure medicine before before we started the show. So, and is that here? Aunt Poop?
Yes, I am, sir.
Oh, okay. Because you're the one that kind of brought it up. So I'll let you intro it and go from there.
Well, do we want to go over the nominations, or do we want to talk about the controversy?
I don't have to go over the nominations per se, just the controversy.
Well, so for starters, there's the whole Selma being shut out, snubbed, if you will, as far as the director Ava DuVernay. I don't know how you pronounce the name. I'm getting my Michael Dean on. DuVernay. Ava DuVernay. Who was nominated for, I believe, a few awards, not only the Golden Globe, which being her biggest one, for Best Director. The actor who played Martin Luther King, I'm not going to even bother trying to pronounce his name, not getting nominated, as well as the script or any other key categories other than Best Picture, which to me is kind of a token, as there's 8 nominations. So it's like, okay, we'll do that to help boost Paramount's bottom line, to encourage people to go see the film, which the reason why they went from 5 to 10 nominations was for that, as traditionally when a film does get a Best Picture nomination, their box office take increases afterwards. And then the Best Original Song, Glory by Common and John Legend. And so after that, with there being so few, well, none out, no blacks nominated in any of the top Oscar categories, there was this huge backlash on Twitter saying that Oscars is white. This is a whitewashing there's no diversity. Where's the diversity? And then some were mentioning the lack of women nominations, which I tweeted to somebody. Wait a minute, I could have sworn there's a best actress and best supporting actress. So what are you talking about? Yeah. She's like, well, I'm talking about in the other role. I'm talking about the other categories. I said, well, there's a nomination in best cinematography, best sound mixing, best editing, best costume and makeup. So what specifically are you talking about that there's no diversity in the nominations? Well, I'm just talking about overall, it's systemic. I'm like, that's when I just cussed it out. Like, so, bitch, you talking about the fact Selma didn't get nominated and there weren't any females nominated in director or screenwriter. And specifically Gone Girl. That's what the fuck you talking about? And at that point, she blocked me. But my point was made.
Wow.
He said, the point is made is you cannot throw the racism and lack of diversity flag on the play at the Oscars when all you're really talking about is Selma and Gone Girl, two pictures, and you cannot speak to any other worthy films or performances or scripts out there other than the one everybody knows about. We can't talk. I mean, yes, we can be a little upset that the guy who played Martin Luther King, David O. Yeah.
Him.
Didn't get nominated, that the director didn't get nominated. But when you can't say, hey, Chadwick Boseman, when you can't say, hey, what was it called? Bringing of the Lights? I can't remember the name of that film. Beyond the Lights. When you can't mention, hey, in my opinion, Think Like a Man or About Last Night, then damn it, don't talk to me about they're deliberately leaving out black actors when you can't even mention Denzel Washington in The Equalizer. Now, yes. I mean, because if he can get nominated for Training Day, he can get nominated for The Equalizer.
I'm just saying, it was just
as good of a performance.
Okay, so here's the deal. All right, so I have a list, and bear with me here. I have a list of all of the black films or black headline films that were released 2014. So I'm going to just go chronological order. And let me know if you've heard of these or not. Black Coffee. This was released January 10th. Anybody?
No.
Crickets. All right. Ride Along. Do we have an Academy Award nominated worthy performance in that movie? No.
Maybe some.
About Last Night. Again, no.
Not Academy Award, but it was a good film.
That's all I'm saying. I didn't like it that much, but that's neither here nor there. We're just talking about – okay, the next film is Repentance, and I'm not even sure if I'm saying that right.
Hell no.
Released February 28th.
Is that the one with Mike Epps and Forrest
Whitaker? Yes. No. Anthony Mackie.
No.
See? All right. The next film that was released, Single Moms Club.
Oh, hell. You don't even got to ask. Come on now.
Okay. And Mr. D's personal favorite, I'm surprised he ain't yelling, it got snubbed, A Haunted House 2.
Yeah, right. Actually, that's not my favorite. The first one is my favorite.
Oh, the first one, okay. I apologize. Okay, the next film, this is an interesting one. Frankie and Alice. You guys have heard of that one?
I've seen that movie.
Halle Berry, Felix Rashad. It was actually released in America this year, right? But it was filmed in 2013 or 2010 and released in Canada. It currently holds a 21% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, but it did win an African American Film Critics Association for Best Picture, and Halle Berry won for Best Actress.
It's a decent movie. It would be, it would be something that I would see them going gaga over. I'm surprised they didn't. I'm not a big fan of it.
It's ineligible. Well, it's ineligible. Because it was filmed in 2010. Okay. Moving on. The next film in the saga here, and bear with me. Okay, is Belle. Now, this film could have possibly got an award for the lead actress. I'm going to butcher her name. Guju Mbethe-Raw. From what I heard, she got very, very good reviews. The film is sitting at 83% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, which that is, one. Okay.
Yeah, it's a period piece. So, But no one's mentioned that movie at all, and I don't believe the Academy – or not the Academy, sorry, the studio made a big push for that one. So right now we've only got one film that could have been nominated. Okay, the next one, I guess Aunt Pooh says it was snubbed, Think Like a Man 2. That one came out, I forget when, April, I think, or May. Now, probably the biggest one I would say would be Get On Up. I think Chadwick gave I think we all agreed, outstanding performance in a mediocre movie. I think, well, the mediocre movie is my stance. And a good performance in a mediocre movie is not going to get nomination.
Well, it did for Lawrence Fishburne and Angela Bassett.
In what movie?
What's Love Got to Do with It? That wasn't a five-star film, but their performance in it was great. Well, at least Lawrence Fishburne to me, more so than Angela Bassett, but that wasn't an all-time great classic film, no. But they got nominations.
Okay. We'll talk later.
I could see him getting nominated. I wouldn't mind him getting nominated for that movie. I thought he was exceptional, but I understand why he's not.
But I'm just saying, so we're now at two possible, all right? So the next film, and I don't think we talked about this one, Addicted. That was the Zane book. Next up from that would be Gone Girl, and there was talk of Tyler Perry being nominated for Best Supporting Actor. I poo-pooed that. I thought he was good, but not great. So no. The next one is No Good Deed. We pretty much ripped that one to shreds. The Equalizer. Denzel's always good in movies, but that's not an Academy Award worthy movie or performance. I mean, it's Denzel being Denzel for the most part. All right, the next one, Top Five. There's talk that one maybe got snubbed. I don't personally think so. I think Q Storm's not here, but I think we both agree that Chris Rock is just not it as an actor. I thought he was good in the movie, but Mike, you saw it. What's your opinion on that?
I like the movie. I thought it was good.
But mm-hmm. do you think, you know, was Chris Rock?
They wouldn't recognize a movie like that.
Yeah. Okay. So the next one is Beyond the Lights. That's in that same girl that's in Belle, the Juju, whatever. That film got pretty good reviews. It's sitting at 81% on Rotten Tomatoes, and her performance was the highlight. But again, no nomination there. And then the very last movie with the black actors and cast was Annie, which did get a nomination for a song, but that song was written by Diane Warren, who is white. So I read all that to say, okay, so you think Selma, you think they were snubbed or not, you think Black Hollywood was being snubbed?
Now, let me be clear. Wasn't Selma nominated for Best Picture?
Yeah, it's nominated for Best Picture.
Okay.
But I'm just saying the whiteness of the nominations. Where are the nominations going to come from? We listed two possibles, right? So that's kind of what kind of riles me up with this. Like Ant was saying, you know, there's no black, you know, it's whitewashed. No, it's not. We put out three Kevin Hart movies this year. That's why we're not getting any nomination, right? Did the Academy all of a sudden become racist? Was it last year, 12 Years a Slave won Best Picture? Did they say, wait, we had too many niggas on the stage last year. Let's not nominate any black films. No, there were no black films or performances that were Oscar worthy. That's why we don't have any black Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Supporting Actress. I didn't think her what's her name? Ava. I didn't think her direction was that great in Selma. There were a couple of – and we discussed that in a review show, so I won't rehash it. But there were a few scenes that I didn't think she handled that well. But, you know, that's one man's opinion. As far as Selma itself, I've made it, and I think you guys have seen it on Facebook. I'm not going to comment on whether or not Selma was snubbed in the rest of the categories until I see all of the nominated films. And I would dare say that I Love Black Movies and Roland Martin and others probably haven't seen all the nominated performances. So to make that leap that David him was snubbed, you can't make that assessment until you've at least seen the other nominations. I mean, I think Jake Gyllenhaal was snubbed for Best Actor for Nightcrawler.
I recently saw that. That was a good movie.
Yeah.
One thing I tweeted out that nobody dared respond to was like, how all of us, 1 year later, the Oscars are racist when they gave out five Oscars to minorities last year.
Exactly.
Five. So it's like, come on.
Yeah, I will say this, you know, I'm not speaking on the lead actress, but in terms of like what they have for best film, like I've seen American Sniper now, I've seen Birdman, Boyhood, and Selma. I haven't seen the other movies. But I can say,
you didn't see Whiplash.
Yeah, I haven't seen Whiplash yet. Out of the four that I have seen, I don't think Selma is as good as Birdman or Boyhood. I do believe it is a good movie, but to me, Birdman, Michael Keaton, he did his thing in that movie. Like, I just felt like he was on point, and I feel like Boyhood is a better movie than Selma, though I does not go against what I said earlier about Selma. All black people need to watch it because it's important to you and to us, but in terms of just pure movie, it's not the best movie out there, in my opinion, but it's a great movie. In terms of the actors, I could see the guy who played Martin get a nomination, but I could say that about a lot of people who aren't nominated as well.
Exactly. That's my point. I mean, again, I don't want to belabor the point, but I thought Jake Gyllenhaal was phenomenal in Nightcrawler, but I haven't seen the other. I haven't seen. Well, I'll go over the list real quick. Steve Carell, or Carell rather, for Foxcatcher. Benedict Cumberbatch for The Imitation Game. Bradley Cooper for American Sniper. Michael Keaton for Birdman, and Eddie Redmayne for The Theory of Everything. So those are the nominees. I haven't seen all of them, so I'm not going to say Jake Gyllenhaal was snubbed until I see all of the films, and then I can say with authority, yeah, I believe he was snubbed.
Right. And the last thing I'll say, the other part of it too, is I don't really care about the Oscars. Like, the movies that they pick would not be the movies that I would pick if I was Best Picture. To me, I would have Captain America Winter Soldier up there and all these other movies that I saw that I enjoyed farther than the stuff they have up there. So on one hand, their choices don't mean anything to me because it's not the kind of movies that I would care for, you know, that I would herald anyway. So I don't really care if they snub anybody. Personally, it's a closed organization. What could you do about it? You could do nothing about it.
And to
you could protest, but again, not going to change the vote, and you're not able to vote. So what, you can't do it. You're not going to go watch the movies. That ain't going to have nothing to do with the Oscars if you don't go see the movies, because most of these movies are not big blockbusters anyway. So I don't really understand it.
And to echo Michael Dean's point from last year, the Oscars aren't about us. The Oscar is about Hollywood, elite Hollywood industry. That's who this is about. They just happen to televise and make money off of what they're doing. And the thing is, they care. It's like, unfortunately, it is what it is. The not going to get that racial in there, but the whites and Jews created the entire Hollywood film industry, and they honor their own. We're breaking in. To me, I don't think blacks should be obsessed with being acknowledged and recognized by the majority of the Hollywood elite when we're only, and I'm going to keep putting this point out, we're only 15% of the population. Why the hell is it so important that we get acknowledgement from the greater 60% of this population? We should be happy being able to get starring roles, seeing people like us in Black Panther, in Marvel films. Lupita and I'm spacing on the guy's name that's going to be in Star Wars. People, Denzel Washington, being able to headline these big films, whether they be blockbusters or just nice, well-produced films, and getting paid. That's what at the end of the day, that's what matters most. Not the accolades, but the fact that we are a part of the system making this similar money and being adorned by the movie-going audience. That's what I think is more important than this 20% of Hollywood that only cares about themselves and their friends and looking out for themselves to get these awards, which honestly, what does that mean other than to themselves? It doesn't. When's the last time an Oscar leading person has headlined a film where you say, okay, yeah, we got to go see it because they're an Academy Award? What the fuck has Halle Berry done? What the fuck has Monique done? What the fuck has Jennifer Hudson done? So,
well, you know, the Oscars is a jinx sometimes for some actors too. Cuba Gooding Jr. is a good example of that too.
Gwyneth Paltrow. Well, yeah, Gwyneth Paltrow. I'm gonna say that. Cher.
So even Cher has an Oscar. So now, you know, I just think I've been seeing and reading this all week. The whitest Oscars of all time, or not of all time, since I think 95, 96. But I'm looking at it again. I'm from the other angle. Like, okay, yeah, all the nominations are white, but what are we putting out? What are we appearing in that's Oscar worthy? Again, three Kevin Hart movies this year.
Okay, stop hating on Kevin Hart.
Hating on Kevin Hart. I'm just saying you will never hear these words in your lifetime. And the winner is, and the Oscar goes to Kevin Hart. You will never hear that.
I never say never.
Hey, that's what I'm saying. Eddie Murphy was this close.
When Booty Call came out, you probably would have said the same thing about Jamie Foxx.
About Jamie Foxx. Probably.
Or BAPS about Holly Berry.
That's true.
That's true. Okay. All right.
See, the thing is, highly unlikely.
How's that?
Let's concentrate on getting more quality film, getting quality scripts and quality acting performances in films that do well. Concentrate on that.
Yeah.
Because that means more than Lupita getting that Best Supporting Actress. Let's keep that real.
Yeah. 2013 was a great year for black films. You had 12 Years a Slave. You had The Butler. You had Fruitvale Station. You had Black Nativity. You had even The Best Man Holiday. What?
I said one of these is not like the others.
Well, I'm just naming films. Best Man Holiday, which wasn't a great film, but it made a ton of money. So even the quality of the films that blacks have headlined this year have not been that great. I mean, they really haven't. So to
you
say
mean last year?
2014. Sorry. 2013 was the better year. 2014 was not. I mean, again, I think, you know, Get On Up, Beyond the Lights did well, but I mean, it's just not that kind of film. It was low budget. It probably made its budget back. It probably will make it back in home video. But, you know, when you've got a year that includes Ride Along, Single Moms Club, Black Coffee and Annie, the nominations aren't going to come. Period.
All right. So there you go. Oscar. Now, when is the Oscars?
February 22nd, and shameless plug here, I'm doing an Oscar contest at Real Movie Talk. If you email me at realmovietalk@gmail.com, you get a ballot, and I'll also provide some of the nominated films for you to view if you want to participate.
Here are some of the tweets from the hashtag OscarsSoWhite. Hashtag OscarsSoWhite, Paula Deen would be the official chef at the next Oscar ceremony.
Wow.
Real quick before you go, I'm going to forget it. I was watching Law and Order last night. It was on Netflix, so it's an older one. But it was the episode, I don't know if you guys saw that, it was a mashup of Paula Deen and Trayvon Martin.
Oh, yeah.
That shit was crazy. It was basically, what if Paula Deen had shot a Trayvon type of kid, and that played out in the press in the courtroom. That show is wild, man. I don't normally watch this show. I don't know why I clicked on it, but that stuff was crazy, man. I was getting hot watching that. Anyway, go ahead.
OscarsSoWhite, they asked to touch my hair. OscarsSoWhite, their frame of reference for blackness is The Wire. OscarsSoWhite, when they destroy property, it's called rowdiness. OscarsSoWhite, T.I. is going to defend them.
Wow.
Wow, some of these are actually kind of funny. OscarsSoWhite,
its best friend is black. OscarsSoWhite, they nominated repealing Obamacare. Mm-hmm. OscarsSoWhite, it's beefing with Azalea Banks. So, so they went in on it. So I mean, at least we got something out of that. But I just think black folk worry about being the creative and get the accolades later. Because at the end of the day, like Kanye West, he's obsessed with not getting his props with why he isn't having the Grammy for Album of the Year. Mind you, Prince doesn't have one. and all this other stuff. And it's like, dude, your album's going platinum. You're worth tens of millions of dollars. You're one of the biggest stars in the world. Fuck a Grammy.
Well, I would say for the artist, you can be mad about it. Like that's his industry. He's in it. I can understand his fight. But it's to me, it's the people that are outside of it who you have no say in these organizations whatsoever. So it's fake outrage to me. Like, I don't want to. How can you be outraged at something you can't control or change? No way. There's no way you can change it.
Yeah, and I want to say this about Selma, too, because we've talked about with Selma and other films, you know, Hollywood is concerned about box office, right? But Selma, the producers are doing something unprecedented as far as giving away tickets to, I think, middle school and maybe some elementary schools across the country. And this is I get press releases every day of new cities that are – that are jumping on board. Now, I'm saying this to say that it's probably made its money by now, I'm sure. But I think that at least the producers feel that it's more important that people see it than what it means for the overall numbers and for the overall box office. Because I think even with the I guess – I won't say backlash, but with the controversy, I think that – it'll say, okay, black people do go to the movies. They do want quality. They, you know, or we, I guess I should say, we do want quality. We do, you know, want good films, and we'll go out to see them. We will spread the word. So I'm glad that I don't know the studio that put it out, but I'm glad that they're doing that. They're making it available for more people to see, and not caring about the box office numbers.
Yeah. I think that's a commendable. I don't know if that's the studio doing that or the producers. I do think they care about the box office, but that type of movie is never going to be, you know, number one at the box office. They know that making that movie. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, there's a reason why any of these types of movies that probably are on this Best Picture are not made to be box office hits.
Well, you know what's funny about that? You're right. You're 100% right. And what's funny about that is the tide has changed probably the last 10, 15 years or so, because it used to be the movies that were Best Pictures, they were all blockbusters, you know?
Really?
And for the most part, I would say especially the 80s, early 90s. I mean, Silence of the Lambs was one. I mean, that's just the first one that pops in my head. But now we're getting to more where it is the independent. It is the smaller picture, because the smaller pictures, they're able and more willing, honestly, to take chances with casting and with subject matter and that kind of thing. I give you an example, Whiplash. Okay, I've championed that film. That is a great, great film. No one's heard of it. And it probably made, you know, $10 at the box office, but it's now nominated for Best Picture. And it's out of the ones that I've seen, it's the best one for me. So
I think always been, though, Oscars have always been separate from the box office. Like, the mainstream movies would never be. I'm talking about for the movies that actually rule the game. I'm talking about the franchises. They're never going to nominate a franchise movie as the best movie. It'd be very rare, but you're never going to see the true block. I mean, when you look at the real box office numbers, I'm talking about the movies that are really putting in the work.
If you go back and look at
Lord of the Rings.
Was that Best Picture?
That's a here and there, but I think around the 70s, maybe the mid 70s, they started going away from, because you got to think the woman who Julie Andrews, who played Mary Poppins, she won for that role.
That's way back in the day. I'm saying in the last 20 years. Star Wars wasn't nominated.
But it wasn't like that.
Star Wars wasn't nominated Best Picture.
Yes, it was.
Rocky won for Best Picture.
Yeah,
but that was a cold movie when it came out.
If you say so.
Wow. I can see how you could look at Rocky now and think that that's a joke, but I don't remember it being a joke movie. Like, that was like a serious type. Like, this is shit. I think Rocky 2 and Rocky 3 are ridiculous.
Here's what I say: Rocky won for Best Picture. Raging Bull didn't.
Was Rocky a box office buster when it came out?
I believe it was. Yes. We can take a look at the numbers, but I believe it was.
Okay.
What was the third? Not probably. Y'all go ahead and pull my geek card. What was the third Hobbit or Lord of the Rings?
Return of the King.
Yeah. So that won Best Picture for that year.
And that was a make good for wow. Fellowship.
And that was a blockbuster.
Yeah, that was. I think that was a rarity, though.
Okay. Yeah, Okay.
But for the most part, we know the true big blockbuster movies are not sitting in the best picture categories. I mean, that's just a given. I'm not talking about the movies that are successful. I'm talking about the true, like, why the movie business exists is to make these bigger movies, right?
Those movies. I know that this has to be adjusted for inflation. They're saying Rocky did $225 million. I can't imagine it did that in 1976.
No movie did that kind of money back then, except for Star Wars or Jaws or something. But no, that's adjusted.
Let me see. Hold up. Okay, so, yeah, it had that switch.
So I'm just going to look at the 2000s, at the current. For the year 2000, Gladiator was nominated and won Best Picture. That was a blockbuster. Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, it didn't win. It lost to A Beautiful Mind, but that was a blockbuster. And then the next year, Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, lost to Chicago. And then 2003, The Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, that was the year it won. I think in 2004, the winner was Million Dollar Baby, but probably the blockbuster film on that was probably Ray. But
I guess the real comparison would be, what was the top blockbuster movie at the time? So you're talking about movies that were nominated. I'm talking about what was the movie that dominated the box office.
You got to look at Avatar. It was nominated, and it's the highest grossing film of all time.
For Best Picture.
Yes, it was nominated.
Okay, that's one.
Lost out to The Hurt Locker.
That's one.
Well, I'm giving you.
I'm saying those are all successful. I'm just saying, I don't know. Were those the biggest box office movies, though, at that time, though?
Well, Avatar definitely was.
Well, I know what I'm saying. That's one.
Yeah.
You have all 3 years. Lord of the Rings was in the top five block, for the year budget. But I mean, I think the mid to late 70s, they did that switch where they started honoring only these high end films and only dramatic performances. Whereas before, you were seeing comedic performances being honored, comedic actors being nominated, and like I said, The Sound of Music won for Best Picture. So, but and then in the 70s, late 70s and 80s, all of a sudden it just was that whole shift to where it had to be this dramatic and real world and real life stories and persons and transformation performances and roles where, Gandhi and whatnot are getting nominated and winning.
Yeah, let's look real quick. I'm going to go, here's the top 20 all-time box office movies, and we'll point out the ones that were nominated. Number 20, Harry Potter, Deathly Hallows, Part 2.
No Best Picture nomination.
Okay. Number 19, Frozen. Now, I'm sure that was up for something.
Animated film, so yes. Okay.
Number 18, Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen.
They got a Razzie.
Yeah, I was going to say, they got a couple of Razzies.
Now, I would be shocked that you would nominate Transformers for best, like, at least special effects. I don't know if
they have got that. You were talking about, like, the main category.
Sure. Okay, stick with me. 17, Jurassic Park.
What year was that, 94?
93.
Not Best Picture.
No.
16, Spider-Man, 2002.
No.
Number 15, The Hunger Games, 2012.
No.
14, Iron Man 3, 2013.
Arguably, that's a bad movie anyway, right?
Right. I'm just saying, right?
Yeah, I know.
13, here's probably nominated for Best Animated, Toy Story 3.
Yes. No, it was Best Picture.
I believe it was Best Picture.
Yeah. Right. Yes, it was.
Deserving so. Number 12, The Lion King, 94.
I think so, 94. Let me scroll here.
I know Best Animated Film. I don't believe Best Picture.
No, it may have been Best Animated, yes, but not Best Picture.
Two Academy Awards.
Number 11, Pirates
of the Caribbean. They got a Golden Globe.
Okay.
Lion King.
All right. Number 11, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. Probably not.
Is that the first one?
No. No,
that's the second one.
2006. No, all right. Now we're in the top 10. All right. The Hunger Games, Catching Fire.
No.
Probably not. Number 9, E.T.
That might be possible. Let me
84,
take a look. 82.
82, okay. Yes, it was.
All right, there you go. Number 8, Shrek 2, 2014.
No.
All right. Number 7, The Dark Knight Rises,
2012. It should have been, but no.
It got a you best think, supporting.
You so. Think Dark Knight Rises should have been on the top?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. Wow. Yes.
Horrible.
Looking at the list, yeah, I would say.
Oh, so. Wait, I'm sorry. I thought you said Dark Knight. I'm sorry. Let me take that back.
Here's one, which I said was number 6, Star Wars, 1977.
Yes. Let me scroll. Yes. It lost to Annie Hall, actually.
Wow. All right. Number 5.
Let's get on Ed-Doo later.
Number 5, Star Wars Episode 1, Phantom Menace.
Probably not. Razzies.
Number 4, The Dark Knight, 2008.
Should have been.
All right. Here's top 3. Two of these have been nominated, I believe. Number 3, The Avengers, 2012.
No, definitely, and it not. Shouldn't have. Maybe Best Picture. Maybe.
Number 2, Titanic.
Yes, yep. And it won gazillion. Yeah.
Yep. And lastly, Avatar, number 1, 2009.
Yeah, so it was not. So it's about half. Some of them. I mean, well, it was less than half. But, I mean, there's still a considerable number of films that were box office, you know, draws of successes that were nominated. So
I agree. There's some up there. Definitely.
Well, ain't more than half. It's 5.
Well, what would we do? 15?
There's more than I thought. I would say that much.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you look at the films themselves, you're like, you know, I mean, even when you look at the Avengers, you know, best picture nominee, yes, but a serious contender, no. Star Wars Episode 1 and Transformers has no business even making their money, let alone nominating. Am I right?
Well, real quick, let me just do a quick scan here, and I'll again go through what I know of Blockbuster. We'll start at 77, since that's when Blockbuster started. So we got Star Wars. Mm-hmm. That was a box office success. 1981, Raiders of the Lost Ark. We can all agree that was a box office, okay. We said E.T.
Wait, that was nominated?
Yeah.
Wow.
It lost to Chariots of Fire.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 84. Oh wow, I didn't realize The Soldier Story was nominated for Best Picture.
Oh wow, that's a good movie.
So yeah, 85. I don't think. Well, Color Purple. That was would we consider that a blockbuster? I don't know what it. I don't know what it did.
You
that
know
year.
What? Hall of Shame. I've never seen that movie.
Yeah,
you shouldn't.
Pull your car.
I think at age 31, I finally watched it. And I was like, I wish I hadn't.
I tell you what. I will do a little homework assignment. We can follow up with the next show. I will pull the top 10 list from each year, from 77 to current, and see how many of those films were nominated for Best Picture, and we'll discuss it next week.
But Color Purple did 140 million.
Little cliffhanger for the listener there.
All right.
This might be the very first to be continued on Podcast Juice. Previously on PodcastJuice.net.
Man, anything else you guys got
to talk about? Something occurred that really pissed me off. Now, Amazon announced, I believe Wednesday, that they had entered into a deal to produce a television show with Woody Allen. Now, you're probably thinking like, well, what's your beef with Woody Allen? Well,
pause.
I thought that as 2014 ended and that we were going into 2015, that we cared about victims of sexual assault, crimes, and whatnot, that we did not promote what we believe to be sex offenders or sexual predators. As we saw the continued ethering, for lack of a better word, of Bill Cosby.
What sex crime or potential sex crime did Woody Allen do?
Well, his daughter.
Stepdaughter.
Well, no, not the stepdaughter he married. I'm talking about the actual biological daughter. Well, maybe it's not his biological daughter. But either way, the kid that he was raising with Mia Farrow has had alleged him of having sexual improprieties with him while she was a minor. And that got swept under. Well, it didn't get swept under. It was a thing for about a week. But everybody and their mama, including Whoopi Goldberg, was saying, no, this didn't happen. I think she's mistaken. And pretty much saying the complete opposite of what they're saying of the victims of Bill Cosby.
Wait. Aren't most people saying, well, in the media, Cosby, they standing up for Cosby?
Who's standing up? Well, five Sheila, people
Rashad,
stood up for
Rashad. What's her name? The
five actress? People. Five people.
Okay.
For the most part, I mean, Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, they was throwing jokes and shitting on Cosby at the Golden Globes last week, and the whole audience laughed their ass off.
Jokes.
At it.
And Cosby did a joke himself, didn't he?
Yeah, I was gonna say. Yeah.
Okay. I was fine. No, but I mean, I hear you. You're asking, where's the outrage, right? Where's the outrage?
Correct. I'm not throwing the race thing out there. But I'm just saying is, why is this man allowed to move forward with his producing and film and television career being lauded, being awards, when we know first that he. He's had an affair with his stepdaughter that he ended up marrying. Now, to his credit, he's still with that woman. And now the children of the woman that he was with at the time are alleging child molestation. And people were like, oh, no, that didn't happen. They're making excuses for it. Same thing with Roman Polanski. This man had sex with a 13-year-old, agreed to a plea deal, and then ran when he didn't like that he was going to actually do time for it. And people were making it. Steven Spielberg, which is why I have no respect for that man anymore, is saying that they should let it go, that he served his time. The fact that he hasn't been allowed to come to America for the past 30 years is punishment enough that he served. Are you fucking kidding me? So, yeah, I have a big problem with that. And I'm not saying, oh, well, because – This happened to Bill Cosby, that all this other stuff needs to happen to them. It's just like, where is the fair equity? If we're gonna say we're gonna protect our women, well then damn it, why the hell are we gonna put Woody Allen up there as, yes, he's a great American filmmaker and we're gonna work with him and give him this television show, and the BuzzFeeds, the Time magazine, the People, the Salon, the Slate, Twitter in general are silent on this. And it's like, Where's the disconnect?
Well, I think one thing about Cosby is, I dare say that he may be more popular or more relevant to a lot more broader scope of people, particularly in sort of the realm that we more swim in a little bit more. So the conversation is going to be more focused on. He's a big African American star. He's a big star. Period. You know, he's quote unquote American's dad for some people, and his stuff is constantly played on reruns and stuff, the Cosby Show, which I think culturally is a very big impact. So that story is going to be out there more. Plus, he's black. No, I'm not going to say I will pull the race card. I mean, that does play into it. So I think there's Woody Allen stuff. I just don't really think that he's as relevant to our conversation a lot of the times. And so we do overlook that. Same with Roman Polanski, you know. We don't really have any cultural, cachet with him in our conversations as much. So we're not going to be harping on that a lot, which we probably should, but it doesn't really affect us that much. We don't think about it.
And devil's advocate, I am by no means condoning the actions. I mean, she was of legal age when they started dating. She was 19. So, I mean, what he did may be wrong and immoral, but it's not illegal, you know. It's not, you know, drugging, allegedly. Let me throw that, allegedly drugging, you know, women to have sex with them. You know, she was an illegal adult.
But then so, you do have the other daughter saying that he molested her, though. That would be sort of the same as a Cosby type of thing.
Yeah, so. Well, yeah. I mean, that part is legal. But honestly, that's the first that I've ever heard of that. So, I mean, I don't follow Woody Allen.
We've talked about it on the show before. Well, I don't know if you were here, but we definitely did a show about this.
Yeah, I probably wasn't on there.
I mean, I hear you. I just think, you know what? I don't know. There is a difference. Obviously, there's a difference. There's many differences. You can put your finger on which one you think it is, but.
And also, Woody Allen's more. I know this about him. He's all of his films are outside of the Hollywood system. I mean, he generally, you know, he funds them, he films them typically in New York and, you know, that kind of thing. So he's not really part of that machine. So I don't think people really, you know, really care about him as much as Cosby. Not saying Cosby is a part of that machine either, but I think, you know, Woody has always been removed from that scene. He's never been a big player in that respect. So maybe that's, you know, why people are giving him a quote unquote pass.
I don't know. Any last words there? Yeah.
Man, fuck Woody Allen. Let's just say that.
And like I said, I'm a film. I don't really like most of his movies, honestly. I mean, I
can proudly say I've never seen one of them.
I don't think I've seen any of them either, to be honest with you. I don't know. It just doesn't seem appealing to me personally.
I've seen a few.
If you are listening to this and you are a man, go to misinfo.tv.
Hey, is that what I think it is?
Actually, yeah, go to Amber Rose.
Yep.
I almost stopped the show. I saw a splash across my screen. Show got held up for a second. Sorry about that.
Stay on target. Yes, stay definitely. On target.
Anyway.
Yeah, I think that's aimed at Wiz Khalifa, yeah, like Negro.
Come on home.
Yeah, what the hell was you thinking? And then on top of that, when you see the two twins that Wiz Khalifa was with, you're just like, okay, you just wanted some new trim. Is that what that was about? Because the girls do not look good at all.
He does smoke a lot of weed, so you never know what's going on in his mind. Out of his mind.
Yeah, I mean, and she looks so good that I don't care if those are enhancement parts.
Oh, real quick, I see our favorite show, Empire, has been renewed for a second season, which doesn't surprise me. It's obviously a big hit, so why wouldn't you, right?
Oh, my God. I don't know we're not going to – probably not have time to review it in full, but can I say episode 2 was a train wreck.
It was a good train wreck to me, though.
It was a good train.
I say this. It's exactly what I expect the show to be. Raunchy, ratchet, and it did it in spades. I don't think it's trying to be anything other than that.
Wow. Did you use spade to describe that word?
Yes, I did.
What was the assistant's name? Peaches.
Talking about Precious. Lord.
She is the worst character I have seen on a television show. I'm hoping that she's supposed to be that over the top, but it's cartoonish.
She is the life embodiment of the cartoon character from BET. What was that cartoon character they had? Remember that girl character?
That's what she is.
But before we get back to why are they doing our girl Precious like that? Because they ain't got no business putting that girl in a sleeveless dress and in a thigh-high dress.
Some people are into that, man.
She wants to be viewed as a, you know, quote-unquote normal.
Some people's into that.
When they showed her in that dress with the sleeves, I was just like, wow. Okay. And then they showed her in the club with the thigh high dress, and you saw all that. I'm like, okay, you just really fucking with us now. Like, come on.
Okay, but the question begs, and I have to ask it. I think I asked it on Facebook and Twitter. Where did the process go?
Because that was a pilot shot before, and he obviously cut that stuff down by the time they came back or something.
Come on, you gotta have a process.
I agree, though. I wish I wanted him to have it too, but
especially since, you know, I understand it, you know, the pilot being shot and all that, but for continuity wise, this episode doesn't take place. I think it takes place the next day, or you know, maybe a day or two after the first episode, and I'm like, well, damn, his process is gone. Well,
unless he just, and it just says character cut it. And he's got tired of the juice.
And do we honestly, is the show honestly going to have us believe that he is on the phone with Barack Obama? Oh, first of all,
no, yes,
calling him Barack.
See,
calling him Barack on for one thing. And not Mr. President.
You know, but then, yeah, you're right.
And, and Barack totally cusses him out, apparently, and hangs up. But you know what I said when they did that? I was like, this show knows exactly what it's acting a fool on purpose. Like, because you ain't supposed to believe. If you do, that's the litmus test. If you actually do believe he was talking to Barack, this is the show for you. If you don't, you're a normal person, and you're like, this is ridiculous. But yeah, I mean, that's so over the top. It was
I was stupid. Like, he tried to tell me Barack Obama called this Negro up and said, check your son. I don't like what he said. Like, come on, man. Come on.
That's like Barack calling up Suge Knight or something. Like, he would have had Suge Knight on speed dial. Suge, what's going on? Play what? Come on. It ain't a good look. Nigga. What are you doing? You know, barking at. Like, first of all, that would be a what do they call it? Security breach, just to even be on the phone with a fool like that. Like, you wouldn't let the president be on the phone. Come on. That's, so, his man's trade. Man's man would be the one talking to his character, not the president. Come
on. So we, and then we trade, you know, one bad character for another, because I went back and watched the pilot, and then the who's the guy he kills? I can't remember his name. The Dookie Chain, whatever his name is. You know, we got rid of him, but then we get Peaches or whatever her name is. I'm like, oh, Portia's her name. We get
that character. Oh my God! Yes.
I'm like, come on, we didn't improve. We got worse. But sadly, yes, I will be there for episode three.
See? the thing I have a problem with is Taraji P. Henson's character, Cookie. That bitch is That chick is schizophrenic. Every time first she's just badass, boss ass bitch. Then she crying like, I can't believe you let talk to me like that. Like, what the fuck? Like, good Lord. They don't know how they want to write these characters. I'm just like, come on. And then his wife, when she just started laughing, she did have the best line. She was like, yeah, you know, when you get my age, he gonna trade you in. He's like, yeah, you're right. But you'll be right 120 when that happens. I just died. Like, yeah, he ain't coming to you.
I see this show is going to be very popular. Very big.
It's like the anti Shonda Rhimes thing, because at least she has some quality stuff in there. This is just, we gonna get every stereotype and all the hood stuff going, and it has the elements of Tyler Perry. Because you notice all the bad people are light skinned. Yeah, I just had to put that out there.
There's a place for it, man. People will eat this stuff up. I'll watch it. You watch it.
I know better. I know I should be watching.
See, this is the same thing I say about Love and Hip Hop and stuff. I know it's horrible, but I watch it. It's entertaining to me. It makes me laugh.
Okay, but here's the other thing. So Lucius is a music recording exec. That his son is gay, and he's saying that for the Empire Records image, he can't have a gay son performer. Now, I can understand, as warped as it might be, as stupid as it might be, if he was the rapper. I can get that, because, you know, rappers on a machismo. We've never had an openly gay rapper. And it's just like in the sports world. It's just people are not going to be as accepted. I can somewhat understand that. But his son is a singer. It's like, he's a crooner. Like, are you kidding me? And then on top of that, it's like, why the hell would you care in 2015? And then on top of that, just on the inside, if all these, you just know, if all these people that work at Empire, you really want us to believe that nobody at Empire is gay and is not going to leak stuff like, hey, you know, his son is gay and the record exec doesn't like it. Like,
yeah,
come
totally
on.
Yeah, that's totally unrealistic.
But
it's like everyone knows. When they were at the club, it was like, there was someone that was talking to him, you know, it was like, well, it's not a big secret. It can't be a big secret.
Right.
You know?
Well, I would say the reason why I give this show props, it's hilarious to me, because it was the one scene, the most classic scene of the year so far, and go down in history for a while, when the wife is talking to the husband, and she goes and grabs and puts the bib on.
Oh, I missed that part. I need to go get there.
Yeah.
And she puts the bib on and she gets down on her knees.
Wait,
that
what?
Was, that was golden. Yeah. I was like, this show, it don't give a fuck. Like, it really does.
not as salacious as that, but I like the part where Cookie showed up over Lucius's house out of nowhere, and then out of a sudden his wife comes out in that bra and panty set, just looking hella good. Like, oh hey, I didn't know you was here. I'm like, yeah, bitch, you knew you was there. You was showing that to me. I started laughing like, she's showing you are not no competition for me.
Yep. All right. So Empire, definitely continue to watch. Funny show. Any other last things before we get out of here?
Do we want to talk about Naya Rivera throwing ethnics under the bus?
Oh, is this the bath chick? Go ahead, man.
All right. So Naya Rivera, who, you know, that chick is very sexy. She was on The View this past Wednesday, and they were just talking about grooming habits. And she made one of the most coonish statements ever, saying that taking showers every day, that's such a white people thing. And she said that, follow that up by saying, ethnics do not shower as much as white people. Wow. And I just, at first, Twitter decided to go in on her. And secondly, I'm just like, why would you expose that? She states that she, you know, her private era, she makes sure she washes every day. But as far as jumping in the shower every day, she doesn't do that. And her doctor has advised her that you should only shower every 2 or 3 days. This is a case of TMI. And secondly, why the hell are you on national television saying how ethnics don't shower as much as white people?
What's ethnics? Is that the word for black? Is she black?
Well, she says her mother is half black, half Puerto Rican. I'm not sure what her father is. Maybe full Latino. But I guess she means non-white people.
So basically, she exposed herself saying that she just does a whole bath.
Pretty much.
Wow.
That's what I hear. I'm like, okay, this is a true thought. You know? famous moments in thought history. Explanation of the whole bath.
Quick sink bath and some summer's eve, and she ready to go, huh?
Squash, squash, splash, and dash.
No.
Back to the next nut.
Who next? She tried to save face by tweeting out, like, you people need to get a sense of humor. But I'm glad we can have this discourse of showering habits. And I'm like, look, don't try to talk.
Discourse.
No. I was like, no, don't.
Trying to sound smart. Are you supposed to be kicking knowledge? Oh, you're smart?
But the funniest part was she was with this rapper named Big Sean. They were about to get married. They were together for 6 months. Okay, they were about to get married.
That's where I know her from.
Yeah, and out of nowhere, the wedding was off. She accused him of stealing jewelry. And then 2 months later, he had this song called I Don't Fuck With You.
She should have had a song called Girl, Your Booty Stank. That's why he left. I understand.
She'd have ruined her chance of any dude.
He went down and it's like, it smelled like fish and chips down up in here. Like, yes.
But is this Cooney getting in front of the non-ethnic, non-black audience and stating, oh, well, you know, this thing that's done habitually, that people, that pretty much every person feels, is you supposed to wash your ass every day if possible.
It's bed winching. it's first of all, like, I don't know where she's from. I don't know what her claim to fame is, but obviously it's not an educated sort of, you know, she don't really understand what she's saying and the impact of when you say something on TV, it can come at you. So she's not a thought leader. I don't know if she's a model or something. What does she do? Like, I don't.
Well, she was I said she got a start on that the Showtime television show Soul Food, and she's really risen to prominence on that the Fox television show Glee. She played one of the cheerleaders who I think in the second season this came out as a lesbian and has been, and you know, the LGBT community has really embraced her because she had this thought-provoking role on Glee. So that's where her main
she's thought-provoking, all right.
See, I knew I'd get you doing that.
She's, you know, but you know, like I said, just was that song TLC? Yeah, Silly Ho. Yeah, he's talking crazy. Yeah, there you go. Talking crazy on TV. That's all. She got caught out there. Try to clean it up.
Literally. Well, yeah, man.
At least three times a week, she's trying to clean it up. So, you know. And the thing, I will say this, and I'll speak for my ratchet brothers out there. I'm going to speak for Ampu generation. I know with that knowledge, if you saw her at the club, Ampu, you'd be trying to smash.
I still would smash.
You see, there you go.
I'm just going to make sure.
Just don't get her on the off day, brother.
Yeah, I'm going to say, is this day two or three? Let me know.
Horrible. Horrible.
Yeah, it's like I'm going to smash, but we ain't going to get into the cunnilingus. We're going to leave that one alone.
I guess. There we go. Generation lost. All right. We got to wrap this up. We got to get off of that. Ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. No, you do have to wrap it up and get off of it. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, let's go around the room so you can find us online. Sean Hill, where can they find you?
All right, you can find me on Facebook at Sean Hill and Real Movie Talk, and also Twitter at Hill Street Views, and the blog, hillstreetviews.blogspot.com, where we'll probably be having the next review of the terrible Jennifer Lopez film. I think it's called The Boy Next Door.
I got to see that movie.
Although that was a good line when he says, like, I love your mom's cookies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, look for that. And also, Real Movie Talk is doing a Oscar contest, prize to be determined. Just basically select your winners. Email me. I'll send you a ballot. And prize to be determined. So, and Ampu won it last year.
All right.
Well, he won secondary. Yeah, he won second place, but the first place didn't want the prize, so he won it. So, anyway, that's my info.
All right. And I heard the Jennifer Lopez movie, they had to change the name. It was called No Good Tacos. That's horrible. All right. Next up, my man.
Off the rail. Totally off the rail.
And Poop.
No Good Tacos. At least an enchilada or something. Anyway, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Poo. I just wrapped up talking about The Wire. I just finished season number 5 on Podcast Juice Twitter. So go in and comment and let us know what you think and if I was off base.
All right. Now please follow us on Twitter at Podcast Juice and check us out on Facebook. Our website is podcastjuice.net. Hey, we'll see you next time. Work like a job. Peace.